The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. The Trump-Russia story roared back from the dead yesterday, and basically, nobody noticed. All too busy with the big M&M's news. It was the New York field office of the FBI which handled most of the investigation into Russia's interference in our 2016 presidential election. And one of the FBI agents on that investigation was the head of foreign counterintelligence, Charles McGonigal. And one of the Putin-linked Russian oligarchs McGonigal and the rest of the bureau was investigating was named Oleg Deripaska. And yesterday we found out that Charles McGonigal had been indicted and arrested for secretly working for Oleg Deripaska. Oleg Deripaska? Why, that's Oleg Deripaska's name. McGonigal has spent much of the 4 years since he retired from the FBI trying to covertly get American sanctions against Deripaska lifted. And between that and lying about it and taking money from another foreign country while still working for the FBI, McGonigal could face a maximum of 75 years in prison. McGonigal and Deripaska. And, oh, by the way, Deripaska's investment consultant, Paul, what is his name here? Manafort. And if somehow you have forgotten Paul Manafort, he was Donald Trump's second campaign manager in 2016, the one who just happened to work for free. Manafort works for Deripaska. McGonigal investigates Deripaska. McGonigal retires, and suddenly McGonigal works for Deripaska. Manafort works for Trump, but Trump Russia is a hoax. The hoax, as we all know, was Trump appointing an attorney general who would bury not only the thinner parts of the Mueller report, but all of the Mueller report. And now up pops one of the lead FBI investigators into Russian interference in the 2016 election, who retires from the bureau 2 years later. And we are expected to believe the Russian Deripaska goes from viewing this McGonigal guy as a man who's trying to put him into jail, goes from that and becomes a valued comrade who can get his sanctions lifted from him. Just out of the blue. He picked him out of the white pages in the phone book. There is no connection between McGonigal investigates Deripaska and nothing happens to Deripaska, and 5 years later, Deripaska hires McGonigal, and McGonigal breaks the law so much so fast that McGonigal could go to jail for 75 years. Even the Wall Street Journal actually saw some of this. Let me quote its coverage from yesterday. Mr. McGonigal, who also supervised investigations into Mr. Deripaska and other Russian oligarchs before departing the FBI in 2018, began conspiring to provide services to Mr. Deripaska in 2021, prosecutors said. He used shell companies and other means to hide Mr. Deripaska's involvement in the work, they said, unquote. The Washington Post did sum it up a little bit more succinctly. Its headline, former senior FBI official accused of working for Russian he investigated. You bet. Almost every news organization, however, refused to put Trump's in their McGonagall Deripaska story. There is a reason Trump worked the refs on that story for every minute it was in front of mind. No refs can get worked as easily as American news organization refs. They don't want any more of that abuse. They have cocktail parties to go to with these people, Sonny. However, the publication Insider got wind of the McGonagall Deripaska scandal last September, and it named names, quoting their report from then. A witness subpoena obtained by Insider seems to indicate that the government in part was looking into McGonagall's business dealings with a top aide to Oleg Deripaska, the billionaire Russian oligarch who was at the center of allegations that Russia colluded with the Trump campaign to interfere in the 2016 election. Thank you very much, Insider. We may never know exactly what Russia did for Trump and what Trump knew about it in advance and what he solicited and what he didn't. But if not, it will not be because there isn't evidence. It will be because there isn't courage. The leads all remain sitting there atop the table, getting cobwebs on them for sure, but still atop the table where everybody can see them. And you want one more lead besides McGonagall, hereafter known as the accused? Besides the fact that he not only led foreign counterintelligence and was a lead of the Russian electoral interference case and was in charge of investigation of Russian oligarchs, but in 2010, guess who was in charge of the FBI task force investigating WikiLeaks?
Was it the purple M&M?
No, I'm sorry. It was McGonagall. But don't you dare say that any of this might have anything to do with Trump, or that Merrick Garland should reopen the Mueller investigation or publish the unredacted report, because some Trumper's going to yell at you. They'll either discredit your news organization, or if you are independent, they'll just discredit you. And if neither of those plays work, they'll just scream about you enough and enough and enough that you'll wind up on Cesar Sayoc, the MAGA bomber's list of the people he wanted to send the rest of his pipe bombs to, only they caught him first and put him in prison. Yeah, I was one of those. How are you? If that was not enough Trump for you, B, turns out that golf tournament he, quote, won at his golf course and boasted about the other day, he didn't play the first round. He just swapped in his score from some other round of golf earlier in the week so that C, when play began Sunday at the Trump International, I had nothing to do with Russia golf course, the other golfers were surprised to find they were all five strokes behind a guy who wasn't even at the tournament Saturday because D, he was at the memorial service for Diamond of Diamond and Silk, explaining that he only knew Diamond, he didn't know Silk, but she seemed great, and complaining they told him the service would be 15 minutes when it was already 3 hours. And yet, E, Trump was at his Florida golf course long enough at some point this month to pose for a photo that found its way into the Philadelphia Inquirer yesterday, because one of the other two guys in the photograph was Joseph Merlino, and Joseph Merlino used to be known as Skinny Joey. I think you know where this is going. Skinny Joey, when he was still a mob boss in Philly, and nobody's saying if Merlino and Trump already knew each other before the photo or even doing the photo, because F, that kind of stuff gets out and it'll do severe damage to the reputation of Skinny Joey. Also, if you told me the third guy in the photo with Skinny Joey and Trump was Oleg Deripaska, I wouldn't be one goddamned bit surprised. Two other follow-ups today, which I must mention. You may remember my complaint about Biden and the documents. I said here yesterday, I believe Joe Biden when he said there was no there there, because there wasn't. And in the non-there there space, there are now seven different stories and seven different stories about how much the president is cooperating is the same thing as seven different stories about exactly how much the president donated to charity last year. And if those numbers changed, they would get people scratching their heads. And I don't know who thought this was a good idea. And I'm hoping it wasn't President Biden, because if it wasn't, he can fire everybody who did. And he should do that. Well, now it's eight stories. Because what did somebody leak to The New York Times? Quote, Biden's lawyers told the Justice Department in November that they had no reason to believe that copies of official records from his vice presidency had ended up anywhere beyond a think tank in Washington, where several classified documents had been found that month. Two people familiar with the matter said on Sunday. That assertion, the people said, was based on interviews with former officials who had been involved in the process of packing and shipping such material, unquote. Because sure, these are the people whose word is gold on this. Because sure, those people were supposed to make sure there weren't any documents at the Washington think tank either. But just because they were wrong about that, that's no reason to suppose they're not 100% right about there being no documents anywhere else in the world. The president needs to fire his lawyers and anybody else connected with this and get in some people who will doubt more and assume less, because you want the doubt inside the tent. And because each new version of this story that comes out guarantees another week of coverage of this meaningless, trivial filing problem that is being turned into an impeachment preamble simply because there are eight different damned stories, or maybe more by now, because I've been in here in the studio for 10 minutes and I haven't been able to check Twitter. Lastly, because I need the comic relief, to Arizona, where the sitting senior senator from that state is polling at 13%. And the question of if she tries to run as an independent in 2024, who she will damage more, the Democrat or the Republican, is now believed to be pretty much a toss-up. Anyway, the Democrat has now entered the chat, the real one, and I'll just read the opening sentence from the Associated Press bulletin yesterday. Quote, Phoenix AP, Democratic Representative Ruben Gallego, to run for independent Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema's seat, setting up potential three-way race, unquote, which just on a personal level is hilarious to me. Because when we used to go out several times, Kyrsten, unprovoked by anything I said, insisted she had no interest in potential three ways. Races! Three-way races! What did you think I meant? Where is your mind today, huh? Still ahead, the Baseball Hall of Fame will announce its electees tonight, if any. I wonder if Mike Trout will ever get into the Hall of Fame now that the lame team owner who's made sure that Trout's never been to the World Series has changed his mind and is not going to sell the Los Angeles Angels team after all. Mike Pompeo knows who the real villain is in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. It's Jamal Khashoggi. Worst persons ahead. And the first rule of broadcasting, from your high school station to the uppermost echelons of the business, the rule is this. No matter how unimportant you think it is, if you do not know how to pronounce it, ask somebody who does. Newscaster who doesn't, nukes the Vancouver Canucks. That's next. This is Countdown.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team. A driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Cameron-Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two, because as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Still ahead on Countdown, I called Willie Mays at home. The voice that answered kind of sounded like him, except as a woman. And also in sports, how do you pronounce C-A-N-U-C-K-S? And if you pronounce it wrong on TV, how do you pronounce it an hour later when it comes up again in the script? First, in each edition of Countdown, we feature a dog in need. You can help. Every dog has its day. We go to Conroe, Texas, and Robin, a sweet-tempered staffy who was clearly used as a bait dog. And then somebody apparently put a lit firecracker in her mouth. Amazingly, while she has major facial wounds, there is great hope for recovery, and Friends of Faye is doing its best to make that happen. There's a fundraiser for the horrifically abused Robin at Cuddly. You can find her there or on my Twitter feeds. Your donations will be deeply appreciated. So too will your retweets. I thank you, and Robin thanks you.
This is SportsCenter. Wait, check that. Not anymore. This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
In sports, oh, bad news, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim in California baseball fans. Absentee owner Artie Moreno has changed his mind and will not sell the moribund team after all. This means the odds are now 6-5 that the 15 plate appearances Mike Trout got in the 2014 playoffs will be the only time he reaches the postseason. Commissioner Rob Manfred's statement on Moreno's about-face, quote, despite strong buyer interest in the Angels, Artie Moreno's love of the game is most important to him. I am very pleased that the Moreno family has decided to continue owning the team. And if he's pleased, that should tell you just how bad news this is for the team. Baseball's Hall of Fame class of 2023 will be announced tonight, if any. Doesn't look like it. As of the last count of publicly released ballots, about 185 of them, former Phillies, Reds, and Cardinals third baseman Scott Rolen and Rockies first baseman Todd Helton were both above the 75% threshold required to get in. But invariably, when the ballots not publicly released are then counted, all candidates' percentages flatline, meaning the likeliest outcome is, even though Rolen and Helton are above 75%, neither of them will get in tomorrow. Not now, though everybody this close to election gets in eventually. That would mean the only player at this summer's induction ceremony would be long-overlooked Blue Jays and Braves first baseman Fred McGriff, totally fitting that he would get the stage by himself for a change. Since the Hall of Fame news comes up today, I thought it would be fitting if today's Things I Promised Not to Tell was about a day when, aged 20, I had to interview a Hall of Famer for a radio network about getting banned from baseball, and he answered the phone in a falsetto voice. Coming up. Speaking of announcing, when I did the sports on local TV news in Boston and L.A., people new to the staff always looked twice at my scripts and wondered why I spelled almost every proper name, even the well-known local ones, phonetically. Catcher Mike Socia of the Dodgers, for instance, he spelled it S-C-I-O-S-C-I-A. On my script, I spelled it S-O-S-H-A, Socia. Well, if they asked, I would explain it's to make sure I don't screw it up. But that was only part of the answer. At KTLA in Los Angeles, we had a very nice lady who translated the newscast live into Spanish, and she knew nothing about sports, especially not how to pronounce anybody's name. So the phonetics helped her. Later at KCBS, I found that occasionally they'd use my sports scripts on the morning news, and often the newscaster had no idea who Mike Socia was and would see S-C-I-O-S-C-I-A, usually only while actually live on the air. And then suddenly an L.A. audience full of L.A. fans would hear an L.A. newscaster refer to Mike Sioskia or Mike Shaoshe. I mention all this because one of the greatest arguments for doing it, and thus one of the greatest train wrecks ever heard when the decision was made to not do it, unfolded yesterday on the midday news at a television station in Washington. Somebody copied a paragraph of hockey news from the Associated Press wire and handed it to the newscaster, who apparently had never heard of hockey, or of Washington's hockey team, or of Canada, or of looking at the script first and asking somebody, "How do you say this name?" Let me read you the script as it was written, then I'll play you her version of it. Quote, former Washington Capitals coach Bruce Boudreau has been fired by the Vancouver Canucks. The team announced the change Sunday, less than a week after President of Hockey Operations Jim Rutherford said major surgery was needed to fix the Canucks. Rick Tocchet was hired as Boudreau's replacement. Or...
former Washington Capitals coach Bruce Boudreau has been fired by the Vancouver Canucks. The team announced the change Sunday, less than a week. President of Hockey Operations Jim Rutherford said major surgery was needed to fix the Canucks. Rick Tocchet was hired as Boudreau's replacement.
Boom goes the dynamite, or in this case, the Canucks. Which, given how things went this week in Vancouver, is not a bad new name for the team, the Canucks. The thing about local news these days is that it goes on for hour after hour after hour, so sure enough, an hour later, same story, same newscaster, but clearly she had asked or had been told that it wasn't Boudreau. Unfortunately, that's where the learning curve flatlined.
And former Washington Capitals coach Bruce Boudreau has been fired by the Vancouver Canucks. The team announced the change today. Rick Tocchet was hired as Boudreau's replacement.
Poor Rick Tocchet. A word about Rick Tocchet, T-O-C-C-H-E-T, Tocchet. a 90s SportsCenter anchor who also didn't know hockey, encountered Rick Tocchet's name when he was a star player. And whereas the Washington newscaster wasn't smart enough to ask, the ESPN one was too smart for her own good. Hockey, she reasoned, was Canadian. All the Canadians she knew were French. Therefore, Rick Tocchet, T-O-C-C-H-E-T, became Rick Toche. I inherited all of her notepads after she left. Now to the daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens who constitute today's worst persons in the world. The bronze, Mike Pompeo. Since the days when he was one of the dumbest members of Congress, it's been obvious that he's been a big, ugly boil on the nation's backside. His boastful ineptitude and scumbaggery at CIA and as Secretary of State were legendary. But in his new book, Pompeo, who will live his entire life never understanding how stupid nor hated he really is, slams, of all people, Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, who was murdered and then chopped up at the behest of the new dictator of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman. He didn't deserve to die, he writes, but we need to be clear about who he was. Pompeo goes on to explain Khashoggi was not a real journalist, but an activist, and then slanderously ties him to the Muslim Brotherhood. Here's an idea, Mike. We need you to go on a mission for this country. Saudi consulate in Istanbul. You game? Idiot. The runner-up, Elon Musk. First, Leia Heilpern, who was an online Bitcoin shill, tweeted, quote, Elon Musk says he had major side effects from his second booster and felt like he was dying for days. He also said his cousin was hospitalized with myocarditis. Why are MSM and the politicians that forced this toxic jab silent? Unquote. Well, first of all, because Musk owns Twitter and he kept mentioning his side effects, which a lot of people had, and his alleged cousin over and over and over and over and over again, because he is a drama queen who on a daily basis proves that his word is not worth a bowl of warm spit, and who will say anything for sympathy. And second, because of that, because it probably didn't happen. Part two of Elon Musk's tenure here, the New York Times reports that last year, when Marjorie Trailer Park Greene tweeted made up stuff about the vaccine, Twitter suspended her account, and her response was to talk Kevin McCarthy into trying to get her unsuspended. McCarthy, then the minority leader in the House, used taxpayer dollars to have his general counsel, a Federalist Society fraud named Carr, call Twitter and argue for hours to get Greene reinstated. Funny this attempt by Republicans to bully Twitter wasn't in them Twitter files, huh, Elon? No comment, Matt Taibbi? No hand-wringing, Glenn Greenwald? But our winner is a five-way tie. I don't recall ever having a five-way tie, and we started this in 2005. Starting with the Mars Company, makers of M&Ms, which announced yesterday it's shelving all of its advertising featuring its so-called spokes candies, anthropomorphic M&Ms, who had been repeatedly trashed by Tucker Carlson because Mars had made some of them into lesbians. And this bothered Tucker because he was clearly sexually attracted to the straight M&Ms. Putting aside the company folding to Mother Tucker's candy fetish, Mars has now designated as its new spokesperson comedian Maya Rudolph, who may regret this. Let's just hope she can maintain her professional dignity in the next M&M commercials in exactly the same way the great Paul Giamatti has, doing those phone ads in which we watch him bringing nuance and deep feeling to the role of Albert Einstein, dead these 68 years and now 143 years old, as he faces his most terrifying dilemma, poor cell phone reception at college. The Mars Company and M&Ms and Tucker Carlson and Maya Rudolph and Paul Giamatti, mein career has gone kaput. Today's worst persons and confections in the world.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. because, God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To the number one story on the countdown on my favorite topic, me and things I promise not to tell. And this has been a somewhat fierce edition of the program, so let me do something here at the end that's a little lighter. October 27th is the anniversary of one of the damnedest interviews I ever did, and it was with Baseball Hall of Famer Willie Mays. Every time Willie Mays' name comes up, I think of two things. One is that interview at my first job for my first radio network. And like I wasn't scared enough, he did a bit that if I'd have done it, they would have fired me on the spot. The other thing is an amazing injustice that befell Willie Mays that nobody talks about. Okay, so it's a Saturday afternoon, October 27th, 1979, just 43 years ago today, and Willie Mays has just been banned from baseball because word has gotten out that he has signed a contract to do promotional events for an Atlantic City casino, and there's a press conference coming up on Monday. I know, try explaining this concept to any current sports fan now used to seeing retired players on TV, not just telling them to bet on games, but telling them how to bet and who to bet on. Plus, even then, this made no sense. It was like 3 months after Willie Mays had been inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. 3 months! Now he's being banned for life for something that today the commissioner of baseball would send him a note of congratulations and a paycheck. So anyway, nobody has done an interview with Willie yet because he has been traveling, and my phone rings in my little cubbyhole at United Press International's radio network. 3 months? That, coincidentally, was how long my full-time broadcasting career had been to this point. And on the phone is maybe the top baseball reporter of his day. Keith, it's Milt Richman. This man once reported in July 1955 that if the Milwaukee Braves didn't start winning, that they would fire their manager exactly 1 year later. They didn't start winning, and exactly 1 year later, to the day, they fired their manager. That's how good Milt Richman was. Keith, write this phone number down. It's Willie Mays' home. He's expecting your call for an interview about this banishment story. I squeaked, "Yes, sir! Yes, sir!" And I went into one of our recording studios and I dialed the number. And I will not recreate the voice that I heard answer William Mays' phone because while doing this voice was once considered to be a staple of American humor, even American humor written or performed by liberals, James Thurber's short stories are full of this voice. The voice is wildly racist. It is racist enough that if today you heard an African-American man do this voice, you might still say, still racist. It is a voice similar to that of the actress Hattie McDaniel, who won the Academy Award in 1939 for Gone with the Wind, who was a world-class blues singer, a top patriotic fundraiser during World War II, who played maids, housekeepers in maybe 200 films. She also played one on a famous radio show and was paid so little that while she was performing her role of the maid, she had to keep working as a real maid. Anyway, I'm 20 years old, and I have to interview Willie Mays about him getting banned from baseball. By the way, getting banned from baseball at the same time they were banning Mickey Mantle from baseball for doing promotional announcements for a casino. And I call Willie Mays' number, and I'm shaking like a leaf, and the phone is answered, and a gravelly but feminine voice that sounded exactly like Hattie McDaniel says, "Hello, Mr. Mays' residence." And I am a little thrown by this. But I power through and I explain who I am. And she says, and I say where I'm calling from. And she says, And I say, Milt Richman said Mr. Mays was expecting me. And she interrupts me and says, "This is Willie." The Hattie McDaniel-like impersonation was done by Willie Mays. Now, I do not have this on tape. Silly me, when they said you could never start recording before you got express permission from the interviewee to start recording, I believed them. Anybody else would have a tape of the phone being answered and that impression done by Willie Mays. I'm afraid you will have to take my word for it because why would I make this up? October 27th, 1979, and honestly, I still haven't recovered from Mr. Mays' residence. Now, the injustice about Willie Mays that nobody talks about. This is something else no fan believes today. The U.S. military used to draft Major League Baseball players and NFL players and NBA players and other athletes and send them into the service in the middle of their seasons, in the primes of their careers, even if there was no war in progress. Now, they only did it a couple of times after, say, 1945, and usually that was thinly veiled racist political pressure, like when they drafted Muhammad Ali in 1966, when he was heavyweight champion of the world and an activist Muslim and 24 years old when everybody else who was getting drafted was 18. Remember? But in 1952, they drafted Willie Mays. Willie Mays had come up from the minors the year before and led the New York Giants from 13 games back to the National League pennant and was the kind of all-around whirlwind of a player nobody had ever seen before. And on May 29th, 34 games into his second season, boom, he was drafted and inducted, and he missed the rest of that season. And he missed all of the 1953 season. They didn't draft Mickey Mantle, who also broke in, also in New York, also in 1951. And to be fair, Mickey Mantle had about 400 medical problems. But they also didn't draft 1951 American League Rookie of the Year Gil McDougald of the Yankees, who was a white guy, or Walt Dropo, who was the Rookie of the Year in 1950 and was a white guy, or Roy Sievers, who was the Rookie of the Year in 1949 and was a white guy, or you get the point. Now, trying to calculate should-have-beens and would-have-beens in sports is a risky business, but you can get a statistical approximation. If a player hits 20 homers in his first season, then misses 2 years, then comes back and hits 41 homers in his first year back, you can extrapolate from that that he probably would have hit 27 homers in the first missing year and 34 in the second missing year. Your numerical sequence is 20 homers, then 27, then 34, then 41. You have to tinker a little bit with it in Mays' case because he did not miss all of 1952, just from June on, and he had a slow start. He only hit 4 homers in the first 2 months of 1952. So instead of 27 that year, maybe he only hits 24. So a good guess as to how many homers Willie Mays did not hit because he got drafted and all the other guys didn't. The good guess is, all told, he missed the chance to hit 54 homers that he probably would have hit. In real life, Willie Mays finished with 660 career home runs. For most of the 1960s, it was thought he was the man who would challenge Babe Ruth's career home run record, not Hank Aaron, but Willie Mays. Willie Mays hit 660 homers, but if you give him the 54 more homers he might have hit if he hadn't been so curiously drafted in 1952, Willie Mays finishes with 714 home runs, which is exactly how many Babe Ruth hit. 714. So no drafting, and maybe in 1972 and 1973 and 1974, we are seeing Willie Mays hit his 700th home run and challenging Babe Ruth, and coming down the stretch and tying and breaking Babe Ruth's record, and then right behind him, Henry Aaron hits his 715th homer, and then his 716th homer to break the all-time record held by Willie Mays. Mr. Mays's residence. Countdown has come to you from the studios of Olbermann Broadcasting Empire World Headquarters in the Sports Capsule Building in New York. Thank you for listening. Here are the credits. Most of the music, including our theme from Beethoven's Ninth, was arranged, produced, and performed by Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel. They are the Countdown musical directors. All orchestration and keyboards by John Philip Chanel. Guitars, bass, and drums by Brian Ray. Produced by TKO Brothers. Other Beethoven selections have been arranged and performed by No Horns Allowed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN2, and it was written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Musical comments from Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend Kenny Mayne. Everything else is pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 749th day since Donald Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Arrest him now, while we still can. The next scheduled Countdown tomorrow. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.